You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Save big money on your outdoor project at Menards. Take the guesswork out of landscaping with our free, easy-to-use design program. Plus, Menards has the largest in-stock selection of concrete landscape blocks at the best prices. Get started on your dream landscape now. Visit us in-store or on Menards.com to see our full selection of landscape blocks and get your project started today. Save big money
at Menards. I'm a pediatric dietitian and feeding therapist, and I help parents with fussy eating.
When you start weaning them, that you think is going to be this really fun, exciting process. What actually defines like a fussy eater?
So it does normally often happen around that kind of 18-month stage, and that's because it's the neophobic stage. So it's that fear of new foods. By eating off your plate, they've seen you eat it, so they know the food's safe, so they're much more likely
to eat your own food. That's actually blown my mind.
What are some of the biggest mistakes you see parents making?
Applying too much pressure.
You know, in the kids' school, what's for dinner? And we'll say, oh, it's curry. And then you always get that one go, oh. Yeah.
So I'm a bit anti this just because the one bite rule, I think the problem is you're applying pressure to a child.
Is there any like red flags?
If they're cutting out whole food groups,
yeah.
The screaming stopped, she started to grow and she was just happy again. It was just horrible.
I've got a question for you, which I feel like it has been a controversial one for me online in the past. I've made some. Hi everyone, I'm Emily.
And I'm Matt.
And welcome back to our podcast, What They Don't Tell You.
But we will.
Yes, and today we are talking about a subject that we know...
too well.
Too well, but for the wrong reasons. We're talking about fussy eating, why kids get picky, and what actually helps when it comes to mealtimes so that you don't lose your mind. And to help us, we are joined by pediatric dietitian Emma Shufcutt, and she is here to share some real life advice and reassurance. Welcome, Emma.
Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me today.
That's all right.
Thank you. We have so many questions about this subject.
Where were you about 10 years
yeah,
ago?
Yeah, we actually needed this a while ago. But before we get into the questions, can you just give us a little bit of background about yourself and what you do?
Yeah, so my name's Emma Shufcutt. I'm a pediatric dietitian and feeding therapist, and I help parents with fussy eating. But I'm also, more importantly, a mum who's also survived fussy eating. So I know how stressful it is, and I try to provide lots of practical strategies to help parents.
Mm-hmm. That's what we want, actual solutions rather than why it happened or why it's happening. It's like, I think parents just need to know what they do about it. So what led you... to become interested in such a topic? Like, what's your story?
So my child was born prematurely, absolutely hated milk and food. She had a cow's milk allergy in the end, so screamed nonstop for 3 months. Weaning was absolutely horrendous, is the best way of describing. I genuinely hated weaning. Oh. It was really, really stressful. She didn't put anything in her mouth. Mm-hmm. Like, I could spoon feed her a little bit of food, but saying she never picked up a toy, nothing went near her mouth. As far as she was concerned, it wasn't, you know. And we then went to nursery when she was about 13 months old. And I remember having that health check, you know, you have those sort of health checks. And they're like, yes. And you see the health visitor and they're like, well, why is your child not putting anything in their mouths and all these things? And they were like, well, let's just see how it goes. And they were like, well, what you should do is just not feed her and then she'll start eating. And I was like, and she looked at me and she went, you're a dietitian, aren't you? And I was like, yeah. And she's like, you're not going to do that, are you? And I'm like, no. And then as things went on, she did start to get better and she did start to eat. So a lot of the practical strategies that I share with other parents are from a lived experience of having a child that basically didn't really want to eat anything, had no interest in eating anything. And she's also tiny. She's on the second centile. So her appetite is really, really small. Yeah. But she's now nearly nine and she'll eat a really good variety of food. Small amounts. And I often do try and get her weight up, but she does eat a good variety of foods now.
Yeah.
It's funny how when you start weaning them, that you think it's going to be this really fun, exciting process. And then as soon as you start one, they may not even put it in their mouth, but also the mess and then the constant, like, you know, having to make the food and
is it nutritionally,
you know, is it good enough? You know, it's really hard, isn't it?
Yeah, really hard.
Yeah. But so what actually defines like a fussy eater? Is it just they won't eat vegetables or is it more than that?
So in terms of a fussy eater and how I work like as a feeding therapist, so we have like what we call like a fussy eater and then more of a problem eater as well.
Okay.
So your fussy eater will generally eat most of the food groups. So when I mean food groups, I mean like carbohydrates, you know, dairy or non-dairy alternatives, some kind of fruit and vegetable. And they tend to have foods in each of those different groups.
Yeah.
And they normally eat around sort of at least sort of 30 foods. Whereas your problem eater tends to be very restrictive. So they'll often eat less than 20 foods. They tend to skip like whole food groups. So they might have no fruit and vegetables in their diet at all. And they'll be very particular about, often there can be lots of sensory issues around food as well. They often can't necessarily sometimes eat in the same room with other food. So there can be a lot more things going on than just your typical kind of fussy eating as well.
We should probably bust some myths. So there's some common myths with fussy eaters. What would you say they are?
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to five pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
So I would say one of them is eating is easy, because it's actually like the most complex thing we do as humans.
Wow.
In terms of our body, the most important thing is breathing. So if we struggle with breathing, then the child struggles with eating.
Yeah.
Okay. Postural stability is the second most important thing. Your body, your brain wants to be stable. And then number three is eating. And we use like all our sensory systems to eat. We use lots of our nerves. We use, you know, lots of muscles and stuff to eat. So it's actually really, really complex, but we think it's a really straightforward two-step process when actually there's about 32 steps to actually eating as well.
It's so true, isn't it? You're like, just eat your food.
Yeah.
Like, it's actually way more to it.
Yeah.
And now I feel terrible.
Yeah, because as adults, we just do, don't we? We just eat it and it's no issue.
Yeah.
But I guess for kids, it is a lot trickier.
There's a lot going on.
But so with, say, one of our children, he went from being a young baby eating everything. Like I could puree up cauliflower, he would just eat it happily. You know, broccoli, like all of the veggies he would eat so, so well until he got to about 18 months old. And then, didn't even talk about Caleb here.
Yeah.
Even now I say to him, you love cauliflower, you used to eat it all the time. And then he got really fussy, like as he got older. But typically, when does fussy eating tend to start?
So it does normally often happen around that kind of 18-month stage. And that's because it's the neophobic stage. So it's that fear of new foods, which goes back, you know, hundreds of years to hunter-gatherer kind of days when children could basically were more mobile, so they potentially could pick up poisonous food. So it was like a way of protecting them. So most children go through around that, what we call that neophobic stage, around that age. And it's just linked basically to fear and safety of food. So you'll often get your child will eat off your plate. So you'll serve exactly the same food to them and you'll have exactly the same food, but they only want to eat off your plate. Mm-hmm. And this sounds really bad, but by eating off your plate, they've seen you eat it. So they know the food's safe. So they're much more likely to eat your own
That's
food.
Actually blown my mind.
But we've got a fussy dog and like we do that, like she won't eat her food, but she wants out. So I pretend that I've got a plate of dog food and I'm like, go on then, you can have the
dog
food.
He's like, you're not allowed it.
And she eats it.
Yeah. I mean, oh my gosh, but that's a survival instinct.
Yeah.
That's actually so interesting.
Yeah. And you don't think about it, do you? You think like, oh, it's just, they're just being difficult, but actually it's, you know, protecting them really from eating poisonous foods.
More to that. Oh, wow.
Well, that's my next question is, are there any biological or psychological reasons behind fussy eating in children?
So, so biologically, it's the neophobic stage, really. That's the reason as well. I mean, you do also get children, a lot of children that I work with as well, like more the problem eaters. Again, there can be a lot of issues. And there are lots of things with children that have suffered, you know, really bad reflux or allergies as well that often can struggle a lot. Like I think with my little girl, a lot of her eating issues around food stems from having really bad reflux, having allergies. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you have a child that has allergies and you're going, no, you can't eat this, let me check the label. You're not necessarily getting a positive relationship around food to start with either.
Yeah, so stressful, true. Isn't it?
Yeah. Our eldest has a severe peanut allergy. And like he was quite fussy as a child. Yeah. But looking back now, out of the three, he probably was actually the least fussy. You know, like it just felt that because he was our first. I remember the doctor said, I actually went to the doctor to say, like, I just don't think he's eating very much. And he said, keep a diary of every single thing he eats throughout the day, like every little snack, every drink, whatever. And then when I had written it all down, I thought, oh, this actually is quite a lot. It'd be like five raisins, but then this and then this. And I was like, oh, their tummies are only tiny, aren't they?
Yeah, they're only the size of their fists, so they are really small. I often say to parents, think of it over a whole week rather than individual meals, because I think it's really stressful if you start focusing on every single meal.
Like almost like keep a diary for the week then.
And then you'll see, and often you'll get variations. And again, you know, if children are teething or they're unwell or anything else, and like the heat we had, you know, that's going to affect their appetite as well, and they're not going to eat as well. So there's lots of factors.
Even as adults, I guess we have days when we're really hungry and days when we're not at all.
don't have many of those.
Well, you don't. But there is so much pressure for parents to get it right, especially when they're really little and they're sat in the high chair and family around and they're not eating anything and everyone's
got an
opinion.
And then you've obviously got other people's, other family's opinion. Oh, you ate better than that. Or you want to try this, you want to try that.
Yeah. But they also put like whiskey in milk, didn't they? And to help you to sleep. But, but what would you say to parents who feel like they're failing, like when they're trying to feed their kids?
One, they're not failing. It's not your fault. You've done nothing wrong. Like that's probably one of the first things I say to parents. I get so many parents who come to me and say, oh, I've done this wrong. That's the reason they don't eat. And it's like, no, you've done nothing wrong. So always take that blame away from you, because I think it's a really horrible place to be in, and you should never blame yourself. The way I think of it is that some children just struggle with eating and they need more help and support. Like if you had a child that was struggling with reading and writing, like, oh, I'm dyslexic. And, you know, if you struggle with reading or writing, you hope that someone will help and support you. You don't sort of, you know, shout at them or apply loads of pressure to make them read and write. And again, that's the same with eating. Children aren't trying to be difficult. Sometimes it's a skill issue. Sometimes it's sensory. Or they're fearful of something. So there's something going on as to why they're not eating. Mm-hmm. And it's not to do with anything that you've done as a parent.
You know your child as well, don't you? So I feel like you know when they're playing you. And but then it's the whole argument, oh, you ate that yesterday. So there's things you know that they eat. That's when the games start. And then it's trying to work out when they are playing a game, when they don't actually want to eat it or they're...
It is that typical that like they'll eat it once and then you buy loads of it and then they just won't eat it again.
What are some of the biggest mistakes you see parents making when dealing with picky eaters?
So I would say applying too much pressure, especially at meal times, like trying to make a child eat. There's something called division of responsibility that was developed by this American lady. And she basically said that as a parent, you are responsible for providing the food and providing sort of safe preferred options. So you never want to present a meal that a child could never eat and they've never eaten before. You want to make sure there's something that they can eat at that table. but as the, that's your role as the parent, but as the child, it's their role to decide what and how much of that food to, that they want, they eat. Yeah. It's not your job to force them to eat or have one more bite or any of those things, because all that does is to eat. We need to be in a really relaxed state. We need to be able to digest our food. We should be in a relaxed way.
Yeah.
And if we're not, and you're, child stressed or anxious, then their appetite's going to decrease and they're not going to want to eat.
Yeah. So hard, isn't it? Because like everything is so routine and regimented, like to suit us as well as them, and like what time you all have dinner. Obviously you want to give everyone a hot meal, and obviously you can do it at the same time, but everyone is different, feels hunger at different periods, right?
Yeah, and but something we always find hard is like, it's really difficult to find something that all five people want to eat for dinner. So it's like, you know,
and we moan about making three different sides because someone doesn't like rice, someone doesn't like noodles. And like, part of it is like, no, you to all eat. It's like, no, I don't want to make you eat something you don't eat, because I don't eat stuff. I make stuff pretty much that I would, well, I mean, we eat most things anyway.
But there's very few family dishes we all, no. You know, when the kids say, what's for dinner? And we all say, oh, it's curry. And then you always get like one go, oh. But then I think, well, it's hard to get something that everyone wants to.
Fine line of balance in it, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think you can plan out meals as well. So that like one night mum has a favourite, dad has favourite. Yes. You know, you can do that as well, so that everyone feels like they get the option as well.
Yeah.
And I think it also depends on the child as well. Like, you know, if you've got curry and you're serving some rice and some vegetables, if you separate it out, you know, things like that. And I always say about doing like family style meals, so putting the food in the middle of the table, so people can serve themselves. You have an empty plate, so it's not so overwhelming for a child as well. Because sometimes parents put big portions.
Yeah, it's so true.
And it's quite stressful then for a child. So again, trying to have routine.
We don't do that. But when we have friends around, we do. If we have a barbecue, we do that. We put it on the island and everyone can help themselves. But then you just see what our kids actually get. Do you know what I mean?
It's like one potato wedge.
You've got to give them that control, and it's obviously a party, so you're like, I'll just let them eat what they like. But it's like, you watch that, say, Kate, it's like beige buffet, do you know what I mean? It's like, literally, come on, mate, have some veg, and like, he will pick something up. But yeah, it's like,
no, but I really like that tip, because it's something that everyone can just try and then see, you know, we should try that tonight and see what happens.
Yeah, but I feel like our kids, like, when they're in control, like, because I grew up like that. My mum would often just put the food in the middle. If there was leftovers, especially, she'd put it in the middle and you help yourself. And I probably ate more because of it, because I knew there was more to have.
Yeah.
But I just feel like, given the choice, like,
you have to try it.
We never make them eat a full plate.
Yeah.
But we do eat early, actually.
We eat at like 5 p.m.
That's okay,
because we're around.
And we say to the kids, like, they're coming from school, and we're like, you can have one snack, but then anything else you have is after dinner. If you're still hungry, fair enough, but eat your dinner. Not all of it, but most of it.
But it's good to have a schedule and have, like, you know, set meals, like lunch, you know, breakfast, you know, snack, lunch, snack, dinner. Like, that's really important as well for children, for their hunger and fullness cues as well. Okay. So that is really important.
Yeah. And we all try to sit down together, and, you know, like, we had that as kids, and I think we both think that's important, don't we? If no one's got old clubs and everything.
Yeah, yeah, we're fortunate that we can do that.
I've got a question for you, which I feel like, it has been a controversial one for me online in the past. I've made some like fussy eating videos, and I'll do recipes with like hidden veggies. So I'll like blend up like, you know, into a pasta sauce, or hide it just in a way just to get it into the kids. But then I have had comments in the past saying, you know, you shouldn't hide it. They should know what's in it. And what are your views on like hidden veggies?
I think it is hard, because if you're trying to get some kind of nutrition in, I understand like, you know, why parents do that. I think the thing to remember is that it's unlikely that child's ever going to eat those vegetables on their own if they've never seen them. So what I would say is, if you can get your child involved in the kitchen cutting up those vegetables, even if you're going to blend them up a bit, like, at least they can see them in the whole form, they can interact with them. Because again, like I said, with the 32 steps to eating, you've got to be able to touch food, interact with food, smell food, before a child's necessarily going to eat it either. So if they've never seen it, then it's unlikely they're ever going to actually eat that food later down the line.
Well, if they're out or something and they get offered carrots, they go, oh no, I don't eat those. But they actually do.
They just don't associate
it with that.
Yeah, that's a good tip though, to get them involved.
Yeah. I guess it's case by case as well, isn't it, with kids, as to why you're doing it. If you've tried every other option, you're still not getting the vitamins in them.
That's it. I think sometimes you're just like, oh, you know, I can't remember the last time you ate a vegetable, so I'm going to blend it up.
Going on holiday, it does, isn't it? Yeah. Go to America or something.
Yeah, those all-inclusive buffets or...
Yeah. And I think when you go on holiday, you just kind of have to be like, well, it's a week. Yeah. It's just a week and that's it. That's okay as well. Because otherwise, I think you just... Parents end up ruining their holidays, I think, because they're stressing so much about their child's eating as well.
Yeah, three donuts for breakfast, you're fine.
Yeah, I think we give up at parties as well.
Yeah.
Because sometimes, you know, there's stuff on the side and then if all the other children are having it and then you're like, not you.
Well, everyone's got different rules with their children, right? Mm. So it's like, you don't want to be that parent that's, or, yeah, you don't want your child to be like, oh, but they're having it. And it's like, okay, you can have 17 fruit shoots, it's fine.
Yeah.
And you don't want to restrict them completely either because, again, that causes its own issues as well.
How can we help kids expand their food range without creating anxiety around sort of meal times?
So for me, again, like I just said with the, you know, getting them to help with meal times and everything else, but one thing I did with my little girl that worked really, really well was we did like the Strictly Come Dancing food challenge.
Okay.
So like each week, and again, it doesn't need to be anything to do with TV. It was just because that was September and it was on every week. So it's like that consistency. Mm-hmm. So we'd pick a new fruit or vegetable, or it could be any food, but we'd pick like different fruits. And each week I then found a recipe or something and we basically made it and we'd either eat it, you know, when Strictly was on, or we kind of did it as a really fun way. And it was exploring it and we did things like kiwi and stuff like that. And like the first year we did it, it didn't get anywhere with kiwi. The second year, she was quite happy with kiwi if it was cut into tiny little like squares in a little cupcake with a toothpick. So again, it's exploring with the way you present the food and making it fun as well.
I do find if it's chopped up, they just seem to like it. Especially if they've done it as well themselves. Like Caleb, he'll just like randomly chop a vegetable or a fruit into like a million pieces. I'm like, whatever suits me. If you're going to eat it, that's great.
Yeah.
I mean, like when I had recipes, we did like things like yogurt and pomegranate with honey. Like it wasn't anything complex. It doesn't need to be a big thing. Yeah. But it was just, she thought it was really exciting. Like, what are we going to pick this week? What are we going to do? And it was, again, just cutting up, exploring. And I'm not saying they're going to necessarily eat it all at the end and you can eat it, but it's that chance to explore a new food, learn about a new food. And because it's not at a meal time, because I find for a lot of parents, when you're trying to get a child to eat new food, it's often at the end of the day when they're really unregulated, they're really tired, and you don't really have any real success. You all get really stressed out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But if you take it away from a mealtime and you make it fun, you tend to get much more interaction. Yeah. And them actually more willing to try the food as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that idea. That's a really good one. And what do you think about the one bite rule, or we call it have a polite bite, or you know, how do you feel about people saying, oh, you know, you're not adding dessert unless you eat, I don't know, a bit of everything,
most of your dinner?
Yeah,
so I'm a bit anti this, just because the one bite rule, I think the problem is you're applying pressure to a child. And my view is that, like, if you have one more bite of a carrot, for example, how many more calories are you giving them? What, like 15, 20? And then what, maybe a tiny bit of vitamin A. But all you're doing is putting stress on that meal, making the child potentially more stressed out. So I'm kind of anti, I just don't think it achieves that much. I just think it causes more anxiety. And the problem with the pudding as well, or dessert, is that you then put it on a pedestal. So then it becomes something that they're excited about, or this must be really good. So I really want that. And you kind of create that, or the meal must be really boring and not that interesting to eat, but the pudding's really exciting because mum and dad have said we can only have it
You're taking it away from them. Like it's,
And I often say to parents, well, if you're really in that situation, serve the pudding with the meal, because a lot of children will sometimes, like, especially if it's yogurt or fruit or like whatever it is, they sometimes eat a little bit of that pudding and then they'll go back and they'll eat the rest of the meal as well. So if you're really in that situation, sometimes that can really help.
But what if, like, one of our children, like, he just will never eat the green on his plate, don't you think, Jackson?
The youngest,
we're always like, oh, just have like one bite of the broccoli or one, you know, because he just won't. Like, if it was up to him, I just don't think he would. Do you?
No,
I don't think.
But then, it's like a natural thing as a parent to be like, oh, just have one bite, just try it. Because I do find with our kids, we say to them, look, if you try it and you don't like it, that's fine. Like, all you can do is try it. And if you've tried it, then I feel like you've at least had a go. But then I guess they don't like any vegetables the first time they try them, do they?
And
I mean, to be fair, I often get a plate of dinner and there might be some veg and I think, I'm just going to eat it for the sake of it. I don't actually enjoy that. But I obviously realise that it's good for me. But I'm a 40-year-old man, so...
I think with vegetables, the other thing you can do is try and make, give them like a, what we call a bit of a flourish. So maybe add like cheese to them, yeah, like, you know, good. Roasting vegetables, putting smoked paprika on them. Some children don't like really bland flavors. Yeah. So sometimes adding that little bit of something to them. Mm. And again, if you can get them to help you prepare them, there is things that show that like exposure to vegetables or like even all food that can be like 30. And in some children, yeah. like autistic children, it can be like 60 times oh, or wow. more.
So what they need to see.
Yeah, they need to, again, with the steps, you need to see it, touch it, feel it, smell it, interact with it as well before they're actually going to necessarily yeah. eat it. And I think with parents, we often expose a child to food like 3 or 4 times and then be like, oh, well, they don't like it. Yeah. So again, this is where the family style meal. So if you can just have the food in the middle and they can help prepare, that can help as well.
Mm-hmm. Is there any like red flags that might suggest that someone, a child is more than a fussy eater, there's something.
So I would say if they have nutritional deficiency, so like if they're anemic, because if they're iron deficient, they can often affect appetite as well. If they're cutting out whole food groups, so they're not eating any fruit or any vegetables or any dairy or anything, and you've got whole food groups missing. Again, things like if their diet's very limited, so in terms of, you know, they're only eating like less than 20 foods as well, that can be a sign. Yeah. And again, any kind of sensory issues, or if they're gagging on food, or they can't be in the same room, those are kind of your normally signs that there's something more going on. It's not just your typical kind of fussy eating.
So getting up and doing a cartwheel in between like bites is quite normal.
Yeah, movement is really important. And I think as parents, we enjoy eating, and we want it to be sociable. For kids, it's really boring. They'd much rather be playing.
Yeah.
And most children, especially young children, realistically, they're going to sit for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And I think we have this expectation of all dinners are night. We all want to sit down and have a... But for most of them, they're tired. They just want to eat something and then they want to play.
Yeah.
So I think it's lowering those expectations. And movement is key as well. So if you can get them running around and moving a little bit before a meal, that can help regulate them as well. And it can also mean that they can then sit and also have a meal as well. So sometimes that can help. I do say sometimes with toddlers, get them running and then get them
Them up. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I might get 10 minutes on the trampoline and then you can have dinner.
Is that me?
Yeah. And just on the anemia point, are there any like telltale signs that a child could be anemic or potentially isn't getting enough of the nutrients that they need?
So with anemia, often they're pale, they'll be tired, lethargic, which again is unusual in children.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Often, sometimes you can get that they're eating things like lots of ice as well. That can be a bit of a sign as well.
Yeah, because I was anemic in pregnancy and I was eating ice the whole time, like crunching on ice lollies, wasn't I? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so again, that can be a sign as well. And I think if you are worried about your child, and again, you know, if their diet is limited, potentially they might be missing out on iron. Obviously, iron's in a lot of foods, so a lot of foods are fortified with iron. So things like breakfast cereals and things have got a lot of iron, and things like Ready Breck and all of those. So if your child doesn't eat meat, you can get iron in a lot of other fortified foods. But I would say if you're worried, go to your GP and speak to them. Mm-hmm, and they can arrange a blood test as well.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned your daughter has a milk allergy. And were there any signs that she might have an allergy, or like, how did you find out?
So she had horrific reflux and she basically screamed all day nonstop. And then she started refusing to drink any bottle from anything at all. And I had friends in my NCT who were like, come on, we'll just try for you. And it just got worse and worse. And then, because she was already really tiny and on the second centre, her weight started to drop a little bit as well. So then we ended up going to GP and then they admitted us to hospital as well. But there were other things like I didn't know. And again, when you're a first time mum, and even though I work in this area, you sort of think, oh, well, you know, it'll be fine. This is just, and everyone sort of tells you, oh, it's just colic. Oh, it's nothing.
Yeah, of course.
But you start to go, no, there's something's not right. And then we were admitted to hospital. Mm-hmm. And I remember I never fed her naked either. You know, like you normally always got like a baby grow or something on.
And
then she had like a rash kind of like that came up a little bit as well.
Guilt was that, I imagine, as well,
And I was like, and then they were like, well, we'll try this. You know, we were prescribed specialist formula because I couldn't breastfeed. I did try, but it didn't work out. And when they prescribed that to us, it was like literally, and they were like, it will take a while, you know, it's too different, like instant. It was like, oh yeah. Well, and she still had bad reflux. It still carried on until she was about a year old, but the screaming stopped. She started to grow and she was just happy again. It was just horrible.
Yeah, because that's quite tricky. Like, I'm sure there's milk in a lot of things as well, and especially when they're a baby that needs milk.
Yeah, really so all the formulas and obviously all milk and breastfeeding.
To feed them like naked as such to see if there is any sort of obvious reaction.
Like skin allergy, like to the skin.
Yeah, and again, it all depends on the type of allergy. You've got different types because you've got the delayed allergy, which she had, which is it with like 2 to 72 hours. And then obviously, I know that you said with your son with the peanut allergy, that's immediate instance. Yeah, so that's your IG allergy. So there's different types of allergies as well. But again, speak to your GP, speak to your health professional, like your health visitor as well, if you're worried.
And like you said, like as a mum, you just knew something was wrong. So I guess it is just advocating and like pushing forward with that as well. Like with our eldest Fraser, like he didn't actually eat peanuts at all, but I think me or Matt had peanut butter toast and he just touched it and he touched his face and immediately like it was hives and I just knew instantly. I just took a picture and I said to the doctor, I was like, I just knew that it must have been that. It was such a brand new food as well.
We learned the easy way, didn't we, as opposed to the hard
way. Well, the doctor said, you're so lucky he didn't eat it. Like, he didn't have the anaphylaxis of it, but, it's not nice having allergies, is it?
No, it's stressful.
Yeah. What's one thing you wish every parent of a fussy eater knew?
So I would say that eating is really complex, that it's not straightforward and around the 32 steps to eating. And the thing I say to parents as well is that if I was to give you a spider and said, I just want you to eat it, you probably wouldn't. You'd probably be a bit like, oh, no, I don't like, I'm not going to eat it.
Yeah.
So for a child, sometimes when we present a new food, just because we know we like it, doesn't mean for them it's not like that spider and that they don't have to explore it and they don't have to play with that food first. And I think for a lot of parents, they'll be like, oh, well, don't play with your food. Don't. But actually, that's a really important process as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Amazing. And that, now that our... I will just say, if anyone's watching this and they're like in that fussy eating stage and they can't see a light at the end of the tunnel, but now that our eldest is 14 and even our 11-year-old, they're so hungry. Like they're having these growth spurts. I think our eldest actually grew 8 inches in 1 year.
Wow.
And he was just, he's having bigger portions than us, isn't he? He's like eating everything. So it does come like full circle, doesn't it?
Yeah, he's got his eye on our plate. I've noticed the eldest. So he's like, is there any more of that chicken left? Or, so now we cook extra. And so he can then go and get more if he wants it.
Yeah. So like they do come out of it, don't they?
Amazing. Where can people contact you, find out about you?
So I'm mainly on Instagram at dietitian.withadifference. Or you can see my website, which is dietitian.withadifference.co.uk.
Okay, we'll link all
amazing.
That.
And we end every podcast with the same question, and that is, what is one thing you wish you knew before becoming a parent?
Oh, I would say it was definitely when I brought home my newborn, because I think like bringing home a premature baby, and I remember thinking, I have no idea what I'm doing and I cannot do this for the next 18 years. I think I might, I think I've changed my mind. I can't do this. And I literally panicked and I was like, I can't do this. I don't know what I'm doing. But it does get easier and you do find your feet and you make loads and loads of mistakes along the way, but it will get better and it will get easier again.
Yeah.
And you'll get your life back again.
Yeah. You do feel like in those early days, like this is it now forever. Like not thinking how it's going to...
It's overnight, that's the thing, isn't it? Overnight, your life just changes and you focus so much on the labour.
Yes.
Obviously, this has come from my dad. But I feel like the focus is on the labour and there's not real much talk about having a baby and a person in your life and the dynamics of that. It's literally just surviving labour. And everyone, even other mums just tell you their horror labour stories. They're not like, oh, that is so precious, those first years with the baby. And then and obviously the drama that comes with bringing up a child.
Okay, well, thank you so much for coming on. That was so interesting. And there's actually so many tips that I'm going to try, like the food in the middle.
Yep.
And like, I like the idea of getting them more involved in the kitchen as well. So thank you so much for coming on. And if you have any comments or questions, please put them down below and we'll be sure to answer them. And don't forget to rate, review, follow wherever you listen to your podcasts. And of course, we'll put Emma's details in the notes of this as well if you want to check her out. Thank you so much for watching and we will see you guys in our next episode.
Bye,
guys.